website to see what air conditioners are having rebates, and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't find out a list of which ones, you know, because that, the cost and such is something I'm going to take into consideration with getting one, as well as the BTUs and how efficient they are. And I'm wondering if, you know, I put it in the search area for air conditioners, and then there's like page after page of everything about air conditioners, but no list of what rebates were available.
Sure.
So I'm wondering if I missed something, or if that's something people are still working on to make the rebates more visible.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we have criteria that the unit has to meet in order to receive a rebate. So we don't actually publish a list of the makes and models of the units, because there are many out there, but we do have criteria that they have to meet. So what I can do, and I believe that criteria is on the website, but that's good feedback. It's difficult to find, and it's not right in the forefront of a search. Mm-hmm. That's good information to know, and I can, without having the website in front of me, it's hard to say, but I can definitely take a look into that and look into ways to make that more transparent, more accessible.
Thank you, because it was on my do list to call Energize Connecticut today to talk to someone, and I didn't do it, so...
I'll call tomorrow. I didn't put this in my presentation, but I should have. There is an energy efficiency resource hotline that we should all be aware of. It's a statewide hotline called the Wise Use Line, and it's 877-WISE-USE, which is 877-947-3873. And it routes you, depending on where you're calling from, you get routed either to representatives at UI or representatives at Eversource based on your electric service provider. And there are staff to be able to answer questions and walk you through those types of questions, exactly those types of questions, to help you find the information you're looking for.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question, but I'm not sure who to point to, so let me just put the question out. Around the issue of shared resources around solar, why is it that many of the urban cities like Bridgeport and New Haven, particularly since we're talking about that tonight, we have areas of vacant land called brownfields that people cannot live on, but you could do something like a solar field where you could truly have sort of shared resource of that energy that came from that solar field, or whether you put solar or wind or whatever, renewables, on those types of sort of vacant lands that, you know, many times are used as parking lots and other things that then make the city hotter than it needs to be. Why aren't we seeing more of that instead of solar on top of people's homes and buildings?
That's a good question for you.
It's an excellent question and something we've really been working on. So a couple things, a couple steps that we've taken. First has been to promote and put together a website that identifies those brownfield sites. So it's a, you know, they're we're raising awareness about where those sites are. We actually held a matchmaking event with developers where we sort of talked through available sites and, you know, try to get them interested and try to put them in touch with, you know, in the case where it's, you know, state brownfields on state property, that was a conversation we had, and then also trying to connect private developers with potential brownfield sites was another step that we've taken. And then the third step is, you know, in any of this, siting is really complicated, and siting on the brownfield and greenfields is extremely complicated. So one of the things that you'll continue to see reflected in requests for proposals that the department has put out is siting criteria that includes that as part of the scoring and gives points favorable to a developer that's looking to site on a brownfield and, you know, takes away points or doesn't award points in instances where they're impacting a greenfield. So those are the steps that we're taking. I'm sure folks may have other ideas, but it is an issue, and I think, you know, we're trying to do what we can to encourage development.
And as a corollary to that, there's other spaces, too. Like, I was driving in Massachusetts recently, and off exit of the Mass Pike, exit zone. It was just, so if there's growing grass, it needs to be mowed at DOT expense. And there's a large solar array, and there's lots of median space in the highways in Connecticut that I still is beyond me why they're mowed, but they certainly could be used for renewable energy and landfill space. A lot of abandoned landfills, every landfill in Connecticut is abandoned now or closed because we don't have any active landfills. So those are another type of land resource that could be converted to productive use. Marty?
Let me try to tiptoe very gently here more about shared solar. It's estimated that 80% of Connecticut cannot do solar because they have shaded roofs, because they live in apartment buildings or condos. Buildings that rent commercial space cannot access solar for the businesses. Right now, to do shared solar, we need legislative authorization to do that. My question for Tracy is, given that we have a pilot program for now, is there a vision for when the timetable for when we're actually going to be able to get to a full shared solar program?
So we haven't set a timetable in terms of, and I think if your question is whether the department, if it's a department sponsored legislative initiative, we have not had that conversation. So I think, you know, from our perspective, we're very interested in the pilots. We want to make sure we do it right. We would like to make sure we have a model that we see exactly how to scale it statewide and have success out of that and do it right, and rather than sort of, you know, rush through it and not be successful at it. I think, you know, we're working very cooperatively with utilities on it, too. We think there are advantages to having a utility-based model for this, and I know the developers feel that way. So, but the short answer to your question is we don't have the time. Sorry.
Leader Mike?
So I'm just wondering if there's something that we can do with our building codes at the state level to promote more sustainable practices in terms of green building. This is something that we don't have the prerogative of doing at the municipal level. So, you know, in Massachusetts, they have this thing called this, you know, the stretch code, which has allowed them to make a lot of these improvements. Why aren't we doing that?
Anybody else want to say
go back here.
So I think, you know, from Deep's perspective, we continue to look at building codes as such an essential part of really pushing where we need to go from an energy efficiency perspective. And I think we've had a very collaborative resources. It's a multi-agency type of thing. We need to work with the state building inspector's office and get, you know, the adoption of the most recent code. And we continue to do that. In short, though, it's coming down to a resource issue. And I think, you know, just being able to stay on track with adopting the latest code. But I take your point, and I think, you know, we also push back to say, you know, we understand there's a resource issue, but everyone wants to beat Massachusetts as the number one in energy efficiency. So we need to continue to look and do what we can to adopt those most aggressive codes. So it's one of the most important ways to reach the energy efficiency goals that we have here in Connecticut.
I do, yes. So one of our friends on the Energy Task Force had some solar array done recently, and one issue that came up was that when, after all the inspections, UI then comes to inspect, or UI somehow, I don't want to get this wrong, so UI needs to approve the location of the solar array because it potentially would damage the transformer in New Haven. Apparently, New Haven has quite a few old transformers that are at risk for increased electrons coming on board. And we were interested to know if you could share with the community where those transformers are
I actually don't have information on that at this point in time, but I'd be happy to look into that and see if I can get some information. And I just want to make sure I got your question right. So it has to do with when UI is involved in the interconnection with solar, that there are certain transformers, and you have to make sure the interconnection, you have to make sure that the transformers are not.
I think they have to approve the location, and part of the approval is whether the transformer can actually handle that.
To answer what we've been working on, because as we see regularly in UI territory, we partner with staff, the engineers there, who look at overburdening the grid, and we are going to be collectively working together to map out, because right now there's not a current map of the transformers are at max capacity.
Does it have anything to do with all the power going to Long Island through the Cross Sound cable? It has nothing to do with that?
It has something that is, it's kind of a long-winded response, but it has to do with kind of the max capacity allotment. It's actually very low. And it also has to do with outdated equipment and feeding back into the grid. And if you have a lot of people like Hopogen, you know, all on one street feeding back into the grid, that can overload the grid. It was never designed to do that. So that's where those issues come.
Thank you.
All comes down to aging infrastructure.
One more question. It's partly personal, but I'm sure that other people, this is for UI directly. I don't understand when I look at my bill. I can get cheaper electricity generated from me from Minnesota, right? And when I look at my bill, the cost to deliver that energy into my house with the same wires that have been on my house for 20 years is more than the energy coming from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
How many hours do you have?
So,
and you're saying hires for 20 years. Yeah.
Again, so the components of the bill, you've got your generation charge, and then you've got your transmission and delivery charge.
Yeah, and I look at all of those all the time.
I'm not sure if this is going to answer the question, but we operate at UI, we operate the wires, poles, the transformers, that's all of the equipment that we operate. And there is a cost to deliver that. And the way that the energy is procured is on a forward-looking basis. And I get, regardless of where you're getting it from, whether it's a third-party supplier or if it's through UI as supplying, we don't generate the power, but we procure it in bulk, if you will. We still have to get the electrons to you. And so there's a cost associated with that. And that's really the best way I can answer that question. I'm not sure if I can answer.
Because I can change my electricity generator, you know, fairly easily or as much as I need to get the best rate going, but I can't change you.
That's true. Yeah. We still have, the power still has to get to you,
yeah.
And it's the operation of the pool, the wire.
I wonder if somebody would do it that way you do for me cheaper.
Don't know if that's a possibility. I think that that's really the system operation.
Okay.
Well, when you put the arrays on the roof and you're generating locally, it's much shorter transmission.
I want to see you.
It's okay.
Yeah. One more question, Marissa. I know that UI has appealed to PURA to raise this distribution charge $9 starting January 1st, 2017, and another $9 on 2018, and another $9 on 2019. Do you know when there are going to be any public hearings at PURA for people to discuss how they how this is going to impact their bills or their lives?
I have not seen the schedule yet for the public hearings, but there typically are public hearings.
There will be hearings, but I don't think PURA has put together.
Hasn't been set yet?
They're trying to staff it right now.
Okay.
Yeah, so that will be forthcoming.
Yeah, because that's from in 3 years' time, actually 2 years, 2 years and a day's time, $27 increase in exactly the distribution.
And that's really meant to focus on safety and reliability, the modernization of the infrastructure to ensure that the wires, the poles, all of that is operating in a way that keeps your power on in an outage.
Right.
So, vegetation management, safety, reliability, and modernization of the equipment.
But that's standard operating costs.
Well,
I mean, UI's doing things safely now, I'm hoping. You don't have to wait to do it.
That's true. Safety is our priority, but certainly there are certain areas of our infrastructure that need to be focused on, that need to maintain the reliable service that you're used to. So that's really what this is.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, I want to thank our panelists again.